Hey, Star Wars Ties fans, Jameson here. I wanted to thank you for listening to the last few episodes, which are the Lost 12 Ties of Christmas episodes from December of 2018. This is the final one that completes the mini-series of Christmas in July. I am taking a moment to pause here because the content in the episode that we are talking about is the Star Wars cartoons, specifically Clone Wars, Rebels, and Resistance. And there are a few outdated elements related to this episode. First of all, in the episode we mentioned that Clone Wars is still available to be viewed on Netflix, and that is no longer true. So I wanted to make sure that if you listened to this and suddenly wanted to go watch it on Netflix, you could not do that. You'll have to wait probably until Season 7 is released on Disney Plus here in November. And I'm hoping, along with probably many other Star Wars fans, that they'll release the remainder of the Clone Wars episodes then. In addition to that, I also wanted to point out that Star Wars Resistance has concluded its first season. When we recorded this in December of last year, it was obviously only at its halfway point. So you can now watch all of Star Wars Resistance on the Disney Channel streaming or probably find some of the episodes online. I also wanted to take a moment to give a spoiler alert. Landon and I talk pretty explicitly about a lot of the episodes and don't really take into account in many cases whether or not you have seen them. So if you are unfamiliar with episodes of Clone Wars or Rebels and don't want to be spoiled or ruined of some of the plot points or major events that happen, then you may want to skip this episode for now until after you have seen some of the shows when they are re-released or you get them on DVD. So once again, thank you for enjoying our Lost Christmas episodes as our surprise mini-series of Christmas in July, and we hope you will continue to listen to Star Wars Ties as we enter full swing into our Summer of Stormtrooper series. And now, without further ado, the last Lost Christmas Ties episode.
Yeah.
There's some benefits there.
Oh, yeah.
So,
good benefits.
Yeah. It's Natalie Portman. Lots of good benefits.
There's no bad benefits in that situation.
Anyway.
Alan Dean Foster.
And my name is Beth Revis. I'm the author of Rebel Rising, and welcome to Star Wars Ties. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting episode of Star Wars Ties. I just cannot get enough of the fact that we are able to release so many episodes at once or within a short period of time. And I'm sure your podcast feeds are just overflowing with excitement at the fact that Star Wars Ties just keeps popping up on a daily basis. Today is day 8 of the 12 Ties of Christmas. We are 3/4 of the way through the 12 Ties of Christmas, which is super exciting. And once again, I have my faithful companion, Mr. Lando Fett, with me. And today, we are going to be talking about all of the Star Wars animation cartoons that have been out within the past several years. mostly the stuff contributed by Dave Filoni. So Star Wars, yes. Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, and most recently Star Wars Resistance. So once again, we are so happy to have you here with us. Let's go ahead and jump in with Landon. How you doing, man?
I'm doing excellent. How about yourself, sir?
I am doing fantastic. I'm just so excited this is going on. I mean, we've got 8 episodes of Star Wars Ties within a really short period of time, and I mean, it's just so much fun to talk about Star Wars this much.
And for 8 days.
For 8 days. We've now reached, what, the length of Hanukkah.
Hey, we have. I never thought of that, but we have.
Mazel tov.
I'm not going to say anything. I'm just at a loss for words, so happy Hanukkah.
Mazel tov means congratulations.
We didn't have a lot of Jewish people where I grew up at. Well, you know that.
I do. You know, it's a constant reminder that there's a lot of other things being celebrated this time of year.
I think Han Solo would celebrate Hanukkah.
I would certainly hope so. I know there's a lot of memes out there that indicate that he is. Of course, Hanukkah this year has been over for a week or two. It was early.
Yeah, we're a little late.
So we're a little late for Hanukkah. But nonetheless, we've been going on for 8 days now. Or this is the 8th day. So welcome back, Star Wars Ties fans. We hope you're still Star Wars Ties fans after all that we've put you through.
I'm looking. My sister got me probably the coolest Star Wars thing this holiday season that I've gotten so far. Because we did exchange gifts today and everything. She got me, and she found this at a thrift store, and it had all the pieces. I can't believe it had all the pieces. It was the 1997, 20th anniversary Star Wars Monopoly set.
Whoa!
And it has all of the pewter, it has pewter figures of each character from A New Hope in it.
That's awesome.
I'm like, where did you find that? And she's like, I found it at the thrift store for a couple of bucks. She said, I made sure that all the pieces were in it, and they are.
That is awesome.
And the money, the money in that is really cool because it has the Emperor's castle on Coruscant as the face on it, as the denomination.
Yeah.
It's written in the Star Wars language. All the dollar amounts are written in the Star Wars language. It's pretty cool.
That's really cool. I'm impressed.
Props to Caitlin. I told her, I said, you need to find some more of these thrift store finds. I said, you might be able to find all kinds of stuff.
No kidding. That's really awesome.
Heck yeah. I told her, I said, you're a good sister. I said, that's all I'm going to tell you. She's like, I know. She said, I thought of you when I saw that.
You got to play it.
I said, maybe we need to do a show where all of us are playing it, and we just set a microphone down and record us playing Star Wars Monopoly.
I would do it. Mostly because I love Monopoly, and nobody in my house likes to play it.
I love to play Monopoly. Oh, my gosh. We used to play back in the day till 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning.
That's why nobody in my house likes to play it, because it's such a long game if you're playing it right. It was to the point where my parents would only play Monopoly Junior because it was shorter.
I've seen some of those late-night games, man. I've seen some deals go down that were just, questionable. I think there was one time there was a bunch of us playing. It was in high school. We had 5 people. One person had already went bankrupt by the time this happened. We started at 8 o'clock at night. It was 12:30. The McDonald's drive-thru was getting ready to close at 1. It was on a weekend. And I saw all of the railroads get traded for a 20-piece McNugget. The guy's like, one of the guys we were playing with was like, I don't have much money to get any food. And one guy's like, I'll tell you what, I'll buy you 20 McNuggets if you'll give me all the railroads. And we're like, no, don't do it, don't do it. Just go hungry.
Yeah, I would. We'd have to do it late night on purpose.
Oh yeah,
so that it could be all of the horrible things, and have Star Wars music playing in the background or something, so that it had a thing. That would totally be fun.
We would. We'd have to start around 8 o'clock at night, and as the game goes on, it gets crazier and
more
crazier,
vicious.
And we get loopier and loopier as it goes on.
That would do it.
That would be award-winning right there.
That would be one of the best podcast episodes ever. Nobody would listen to it, but it'd be great.
I know. If you just want the highlights, we'll just put the highlights of when something happens if you don't want to listen to the whole 3-hour show.
Yeah, exactly. But we didn't edit it because we just figured it would be too good for you just to listen to it real.
We'll put the unedited up for our Patreon users.
Yeah, of course.
That we don't have.
As I indicated earlier, today we're going to be talking about the Star Wars cartoons, specifically the more recent ones. Mm-hmm. But before we jump into those, I just have a question for you, Landon. Did you ever see an episode of Droids or Ewoks?
I've never seen an episode of Droids or Ewoks. I've seen commercials for them advertising them on YouTube.
Okay.
Like, tune in such and such day for a new episode of Droids when C-3PO and R2-D2 get into whatever MacGuffin they get into for that week.
Right. And, of course, I presume that you have seen the animated segment of the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yes. And you know what? I think that's the best part of that holiday special.
Oh, I know it is. I don't think there's any doubt or question about that one.
The way they present Boba Fett in that is really unique because he wasn't really fleshed out as a character yet.
Right. No, that was his introduction to the Star Wars canon.
He had the big stick, and he beat that poor little creature to death, though. I always thought that was kind of wrong, but...
Right. And he was deceptive. I mean, you know, he was the fake good guy that was really a bad guy, and he was apparently Darth Vader's best friend. But... The reason I brought that up is because the animator or the animation company that did Ewoks and Droids also did the Star Wars animation for the animation special.
And I like that style, though. Like, I like the way that Luke and Han and Chewie and Boba Fett were drawn in that. Like, mm-hmm. it was, I don't know, it was kind of hard to describe. Like, it's kind of like realistic, like a realistic cartoon version of those characters.
Right. It was a really good rendering of them. You're absolutely right.
It was very detailed.
It was. And it was a great way to kind of introduce, because I think they were still trying to figure out what they were going to do with Boba Fett as far as the long duration of the series was going to go, since they were introducing him. And introducing him in animation is a really good way to kind of offer the opportunity for, well, you know, we've got to make this live action. How are we going to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've already got some model drawings, so we can kind of play on those and kind of take it and run with it. So I think that was a really cool way to introduce that character. I think it was a really cool way to kind of provide a different flavor to the holiday special and its long duration of torture. You get at least a few minutes of true pleasure and true enjoyment.
Well, besides Bea Arthur.
Besides Bea Arthur's guest appearance.
That was... When we do that episode, like, I'm going to have to be... I'll have to be drinking something pretty stout to get through that.
I can make some joke about my name, but I really can't come up with
it. I was going to say, I was hoping you would go with the pun there.
But anyway, so the holiday special animation is definitely something that definitely warrants at least a little bit of mentioning before we dig into the more recent cartoons.
And you can probably find the holiday special animation on YouTube.
No, like, you can just the whole holiday special.
Like, I've just sat down and watched the animated section because I'm like, I don't want to sit there and watch Grandpa and Lumpy and...
It really is the first, like, 30 minutes of it that are absolute, just, you make you want to pull your hair out because you're watching so many strange things, and there's no subtitles for the Wookiee speech. It's just, you're trying to interpret what's going on, and it's not very easy to do. And then you get to the rest of it, and it's like, okay, it's cheesy, but most holiday specials in the 70s and 80s were, so, you know, that's all right. But it's really that first segment with the Wookiees that make it so hard. And it's like they're throwing it at you right at the beginning, and you're going, I have to watch the whole thing?
Yeah.
If it's going to be like this, I don't know if I can handle it.
So just skip to the cartoon part.
And then watch the second half. It's good. You know, but yeah, it was rough. But anyway, so yeah, one day, ladies and gentlemen, we'll make that a long episode in the future, and we'll just watch the Star Wars Holiday Special from beginning to end. And torture everybody at once.
And I found out something about that version of Boba Fett that I didn't know before,
which was
really cool. Someone who, you know, if you listen to our last episode about Legos, this reverts back to some of the Lego talk. Someone made a minifig, a custom one, of, they called it like early 20s Boba Fett.
Uh-huh.
And he was apparently going to be a character in a canceled Star Wars game. And as an homage to the animated Boba Fett, his chest plate on his Mandalorian armor was that kind of yellowish color.
Oh.
Hmm. Like, apparently the way that he was going to be designed was he was going to have the Jango Fett colored helmet and have pieces of the Boba Fett, like, green and yellow armor, but the main chest piece was going to be the kind of pale yellow like it was in the cartoon as an homage to that cartoon.
That's kind of cool. And it does kind of put together, you know, a little bit of the original backstory of Boba Fett was that he pieced together the Mandalorian armor. It wasn't a full set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you kind of see him in the original trilogy, he's pretty complete, you know.
He's done a lot of jobs to get that good armor.
Yeah. So, anyway. Wow. That's a great start. Now, Mandalorians are definitely a way we can segue into the cartoons of the more recent Star Wars, because if there's anything that's been fleshed out in the more recent animation, especially with Dave Filoni at the helm, it's been the backstory of the Mandalorian culture.
And it's really cool.
And it is. It is. It's really cool. So when we're talking about animation of the Dave Filoni era of animation, I guess would be the way I would word it, we're really talking about the co-work efforts of George Lucas and Dave Filoni with Clone Wars, the original 6 seasons and soon to be 7, thanks to Disney allowing them to do a final season, which is awesome. I'm super excited about that coming next year.
It left so many loose ends. Oh, I hated that. It left so many loose ends.
And then Rebels, which was a 4-season show, which I think was an absolute masterpiece of Star Wars animation, compliments of Disney XD. And now, more recently, with the just finished the first half of the season, Star Wars Resistance, which takes place 6 months before The Force Awakens. So we've got 3 different shows that are out and available to you either on television or on DVD. And let's first talk about Clone Wars a little bit.
Oh, yes.
Landon, you actually have probably a little bit more detailed experience with Clone Wars than I do. So I'll let you take the helm on this one.
Okay. All right. So Clone Wars kind of starts taking place after the movie Attack of the Clones. It's the time period between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. It kind of is the filler for that.
Right.
And, you know, you have Anakin and Obi-Wan and all the adventures that they went on and how Anakin took on a Padawan named Ahsoka, who is, like, one of the best new non-movie characters that I can think of ever. Like, I love her character. I love her story progression. It's really awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, we start... Anakin has just taken on Ahsoka as a Padawan, not by his choice, but, you know, Yoda kind of pushed her onto him, and they're having this battle, and you get to meet characters like Rex and Cody. You learn that the clones, you know, they're all the same, but they're not the same. They have different thoughts and feelings and ways to go about solving problems, and it takes a look into that aspect of it. You know, some of the clones start wondering later on, you know, if they're being used, if they're just living versions of the battle droids.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it deals with a lot of really deep philosophical things like that. You know, like the clones, some of them feel that they're being used as slaves to fight a war, and a few of them rebel. I can't remember the one that rebels, but there's one who leaves and becomes his own person and has a family and gets married.
Yeah, he defects. Yeah, I remember that episode. And the other clones, they kind of meet him haphazardly, and they have a conversation with him, and he kind of explains, you know, I just felt like I'm my own independent person.
Yeah.
And the other clones actually accept that, which is, it again, once again, shows that independent thought. It definitely kind of deals with some of the psychological aspect of the munition soldier, I follow orders and don't question authority mindset that, you know, a lot of times you kind of associate with the military and soldiers. But it definitely kind of sets in the motion of, you know, obviously each individual soldier has their own mind, has their own independent thought. And even if they're trained to obey orders, there are times where obeying orders might not be the best option. And it definitely kind of digs into that.
It does.
Especially with, I'm thinking of the episodes, I think it's with Rex and the 501st, when Anakin gets pulled away and they're under a different Jedi's command.
Yeah, I've seen bits and pieces of that one. I know which one you're talking about.
It was a 4 or 5 episode, you know, arc.
Yeah.
And it was pretty rough how you had some of the clones arguing that they really didn't want to follow the orders because they didn't think the orders were very good.
And you get to... And you get to see how some of the Jedi's treat those clones, too. Some of them treat them as disposable commodities that just, you know, it's like, well, you know, we can make more. Go in there and you know you're going to die, but go in there and do your best.
Exactly. Go in there and do it anyway. And then you kind of see the relationship, for lack of a better word, that Obi-Wan and Anakin kind of built with their clones, and Ahsoka even, where it hurt them as commanders. Mm-hmm. You know, when one clone got injured, it was a big deal. And you see some of the other Jedi, and it's like, well, we'll just send the clones and handle it. No, well, they're all going to die. Well, that's okay. They'll be okay. It definitely gives you a different view of the Jedi Order, actually.
It does.
In my opinion.
It makes that scene in Revenge of the Sith where Obi-Wan's fighting Grievous a little bit more bitter because Cody has to be the one to kill him when he gets Order 66.
Right. Yes, it's true.
And you're like, and you're sitting there thinking, like, man, they did so many great things together, and now, you know, because of his programming, Cody's going to have to kill him.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And it's kind of, like, again, I go back to the talk about the Jedi Council, and I think about Revenge of the Sith,
And it makes it a lot easier to side with Anakin.
It does.
You know, you spend a lot of your time in the prequel trilogy going, Anakin is such a traitor to the Republic and such a baby and so whiny and very much like Kylo Ren in Episode 7. But like grandfather, like grandson, I guess. It sets into these mindsets of, I really just can't see how Anakin Skywalker was the hero of the Clone Wars based on how he acts in Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
But when you see the Clone Wars and you see how he carried so much weight upon his shoulders about keeping his troops alive and how he was a high-quality soldier,
yeah,
just as much as he was a high-quality warrior and Jedi, it definitely makes you view the Jedi Order and how they, as an order, kind of treated the clones completely differently.
Yeah.
Because really, the Jedi Order, aside from Anakin and Obi-Wan, and maybe Yoda, they really didn't care quite as much about the clones as everybody else.
They were just a disposable resource, a means to an end.
I mean, like I said, the Clone Wars kind of sets up that psychological debate where the clones are trying to figure out how they are any different than the droids, except for the fact that they're living beings and the droids aren't.
Yeah.
And in all reality, there's a lot of times where, depending on who's commanding them, there isn't a difference.
There's not. I mean, they're both bred and made for war, basically.
Exactly. And it definitely puts some more, not necessarily adult, like, you know, inappropriate, but just mature thinking in the mindset of the audience of the show. They definitely did a really good job of kind of bringing that in. And maybe making war a lot less attractive.
Yeah.
Which I think is a good goal when you're, you know, making a show geared for kids.
You get attached to characters in the Clone Wars, you know, and two or three episodes later, they may be killed off and you don't ever see them again. And, you know, unfortunately, that's a real consequence of fighting.
Yes, it is. And I think that's definitely something to take into account as we kind of take the effects of Clone Wars into the other animation. So, if you had a favorite episode of Clone Wars, or maybe episode arc might be better, what would you think it would be?
Probably the father, son, and daughter arc.
Ah, the Mortis arc.
I like that because Anakin, what it is they go, I can never remember the planet, but they go and it's basically just the planet of the Force is basically all it is.
Correct.
And they meet a character by the name of the father, and then they have the son, who is a representation of the dark side, and the daughter, who's a representation of the light side. And the son eventually shows Anakin what he'll do to end the Clone Wars. And it drives him mad.
Right.
Like, he kind of comes into a conflict with himself that, you know, everything that he's been doing up to that point's been a lie, and that he's just going to side with the dark side and end it all. You know, they lose their memory for plot point, so, you know, he doesn't remember any of this, but he sees, like, the death of Padme. He sees that he's the one that kills her. He sees that he becomes Darth Vader. He sees that he kills the younglings in the temple. He sees that, you know, he goes in and Obi-Wan and him have their fight on Mustafar. And he tries to kind of, I guess, avoid that because Obi-Wan and him are on a lava planet. And he pushes Obi-Wan's speeder into the lava and tells him, you know, look, I've seen what I have to do to end this war, and I don't want you following me or I will kill you. And he goes off.
Right.
And I mean, it's deep.
Yes, you're right. That is a great story arc. And it was a fascinating study. And the fact that they bring it back again later, which we'll get into here in a little while, is just amazing, in my opinion. That's an excellent choice for a favorite arc. And you're right. It's a powerful story. It really kind of digs into the psyche of Anakin being the chosen one and why he's the chosen one, how, and what he's supposed to do to bring balance. And it makes you wonder if he had chosen to do what the father was encouraging him to do, what would have turned out differently?
Yeah.
So it's definitely fascinating in its own way.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I'd say so.
What about you?
Okay, yeah. If I had to pick a favorite, and it's sad, but I'd say it's probably because it's the most emotional to me. It's the one where Ahsoka is on trial right at the end.
Oh, that
one. Season 5.
Tearjerker.
Oh, that last scene with her at the Jedi Temple with Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
The music, the animation, the facial expressions, the dialogue, there's not a moment in that part of the episode that I would have changed at all. I mean, it was just brilliantly done. And it's one of the most emotional moments of Star Wars.
It is.
And it's amazing that it's an animation. But it is got to be one of the most powerful moments in Star Wars, where you see the first real loss Anakin experienced because of the Jedi Order. You know, you can blame the Tusken Raiders for the loss of his mother in Attack of the Clones, but this is the first time where he starts to really see that the Jedi Order is not all that it's cracked up to be. And it's kind of like one of those first experiences where when you've got a new job or you've kind of settled into a lifestyle of how things are going, and then it's very early and you kind of have this facade belief of, well, this is great, everything's hunky-dory, you know, it's wonderful, it's fantastic. And then there's that first crack. You know, something happens that makes you suddenly realize that it's not, you know, rainbows and pixie dust. There's a reality that's going to start setting in, and you kind of see that happening to Anakin. And like I said, it's because of the Clone Wars cartoon that I really can see the change a lot more believable between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith and Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah, that's a tearjerker. I mean, and she kind of lets him know that she knows that he's frustrated with the Jedi and that she understands where he's coming from, and that doesn't she kind of hint that she knows that him and Padme are married too?
I think so. I think
she does.
Picks up on it, or she at least picks up that there's a more to that relationship than just a friendship.
Yeah.
There's some benefits there.
Oh, yeah.
So,
good benefits.
Yeah. It's Natalie Portman. Lots of good benefits.
There's no bad benefits in that situation.
I think so. That's definitely a favorite arc of mine, a favorite storyline, and specifically that last episode. But if I was to talk about the whole arc, even the whole thing with Barriss Offee.
Yes.
Being the character that she ends up becoming. In the Alan Dean Foster book that precedes Attack of the Clones, he introduces Barriss as a Padawan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating to kind of see that book, even though it's no longer considered canon, and then the Barriss that actually is a Jedi in the Clone Wars. And it's very fascinating that she is actually, I believe, still a Padawan in the Clone Wars, even though Anakin, who was a Padawan at the same time, has become a Jedi Knight by this point.
That is interesting.
Because he's awarded knighthood before, like, during a Clone Wars, is he not? Because, I mean, obviously he is, because he takes on his own Padawan.
Yeah, I think he is. I think it was after the Geonosis battle.
Right, because he faced a Sith and survived or whatever.
Yeah.
That was the equivalent of facing his trials, I guess. So I find it very interesting that Barriss did not get that promotion, and I wonder if that might be part of the reason she turns out the way that she does.
It might be.
Or if since canon has been changed, whether or not that's even believable, but still.
I know in the new canon that, you know, Barriss was captured by Vader and Palpatine, and they tortured her for fun to try to see how far they could push a Jedi before they would just completely break down.
Right. What was that in?
That was in one of the Vader comics, the new one.
Oh, okay. Now, have you read the newest issue?
I've not, but I know what happens. I know
what they supposedly reveal.
Yes. It makes sense, though.
I don't know it. I just know what they claim is in it. I want to read that whole series.
I do too now.
I want to read it all the way through, especially since the majority of it, the ending here, is about the building of his fortress on Mustafar, which is also fascinating. So I really want to read it. But anyway, we've talked quite a bit about Clone Wars, and I'm looking at my clock here. Let's move on to Star Wars Rebels, because I think we've both followed that one pretty regularly.
We did.
And we got a chance to talk about it quite a bit. So since you got to kind of give the synopsis of Clone Wars, I'll do a quick rundown of Rebels.
There you go.
Listeners, if you haven't seen Star Wars Rebels, or if you're just now getting into it, good luck trying to find it online. But it will be available, I'm sure, on Disney Plus here in the fall of next year. But anyway, so Star Wars Rebels focuses, I believe it's 4 or 5 years. It's 4 years. 4 years before A New Hope, the original Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it basically starts to show how different factions of rebellion within certain planets or systems start to try to ally together in the formation of what we know as the Rebel Alliance in its formal sense, as we see it in A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. And you see one particular faction of rebellion as the focus, and that is Kanan Jarrus, Hera Syndulla, Ezra Bridger, Sabine Wren, and Zeb, however you pronounce his last name, which is strange, and of course the droid Chopper. And that's basically a group of 5 or 6 characters from different planets that have all got some sort of beef with the Empire, and they end up banding together to fight the Empire. And they start with small, you know, supply runs where they steal from the Empire and give to the oppressed members of certain planets or systems, very much like a Robin Hood kind of esque thing. But by season two, they start to connect with the larger rebellion, specifically the political system led by Bail Organa and Mon Mothma. And by season three and four, we start really seeing how their section of multiple systems of rebellions kind of factioning together under one alliance and being a, you know, a separate element of the whole Rebel Alliance that still hasn't formed yet but is gradually getting there, you kind of see how they start to really be a thorn in the Empire's side, which is really exciting because you see the Empire bringing in more and more sinister villains. So Darth Vader makes a few appearances, but you primarily deal with initially an admiral or an agent of the Empire that is a relatively moderate ranking, and then it kind of steps up to Inquisitors, which are Dark Jedi-esque characters, and then you're dealing with Grand Moff Tarkin, who makes an appearance for a brief period of time, and then finally, the main villain for about half the show is Grand Admiral Thrawn, which brings him back from the old canon and makes him an official new canon character, which is also very exciting. So Star Wars Rebels does a really good job of providing you a lot of material in a four-year span. And in addition to that, they give you two new Jedi, with Kanan Jarrus being a survivor of Order 66 as a former Padawan, and Ezra Bridger being a Force-sensitive student of his as the series goes on. So it's definitely worth a watch and really fascinating to kind of dig into. I would say that probably one of my favorite parts of the series is actually the development of the characters themselves, specifically
yes.
Kanan. I think that there are times where each character kind of gets highlighted, and then they kind of get pushed off into the shadows as another character gets their chance to shine. But Ezra is obviously kind of the main protagonist of the story because you're kind of following him from the beginning to the end. But I loved Kanan's story in Star Wars Rebels.
It was good. I loved it.
What about you?
I really did. I liked Kanan's story, how one of the best ones is where they go and they find Fulcrum, who, if you haven't watched yet, spoiler, is Ahsoka Tano, who had helping the Rebels put these cells together, was when she tells him to go see an old friend of hers, and it ends up being Rex and the clones.
Yeah.
I love that one because Kanan is so distrustful of him, and by the end, like, him and Rex are, like, the best of friends.
Yes. I think that's probably one of the best developments of the series, is kind of seeing how Kanan regains his trust of the clones through this series.
And how, you know, Rex even said, you know, that they didn't kill their clone leaders, that they removed their chips, but that, you know, on behalf of all the clones, he was sorry that that happened.
Right. Which is also just really cool. I mean, that was definitely something that really just made the series for me.
It did. It was so good. And the arc where they were in the Sith Temple after the Sith Holocron was a good arc, too.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was really good. And, of course, that was the introduction of Darth Maul into Star Wars Rebels, which, you know, if you hadn't watched Clone Wars and see Maul be brought back to life by the Night Sisters on Dathomir, then it's really, you know, kind of makes you want to go back and watch that. There were, one of the things I really liked about Rebels was that you could tell that Dave Filoni was trying to tie up some loose ends that Clone Wars had by segueing into the Star Wars Rebels universe, but at the same time, he didn't compromise the Star Wars Rebels story. I mean, obviously, the
right.
focus was the Rebels, not the conclude Clone Wars. And I think the fact that he's going to get to conclude Clone Wars with a Season 7 and still have kind of these final statements in Rebels is going to make it even better.
I do, too. I think it'll make the story more complete.
Yeah, I think so, too. You know, we might actually get a chance to see kind of how Rex and the other clones make it to a random planet where they're fishing in the sand.
Yeah.
How Ahsoka starts to become one of the secret agents, for lack of a better word, for the Rebellion.
Yep. And that scene where she fights Darth Vader is like...
the end of Season 2.
That's a tearjerker.
Yes, it is. You had told me, when I hadn't seen it yet, how much it was reminiscent of Clone Wars. And I didn't get it until I saw the episode that I just mentioned of the arc of Clone Wars at the end of Season 5, where Ahsoka leaves. And then, you know, the next time they theoretically see each other is here, you know, when they're fighting in the Sith Temple. And it's just like, wow, you just want to rip my heart out and squish it with a blender, let me tell you what.
Yes.
Because it's a powerful, powerful scene. And once again, you've got masterful art animation But I would actually argue the most emotional scene for me, spoilers here, listeners, is in season 4 when Kanan dies.
Yes, that one's rough too.
It is. They did a really good job of making his sacrifice noble. But again, while that's powerful, what's even more powerful is when you realize that Ezra has the opportunity to change it but chooses not to.
Yeah. Oh, that whole thing was awesome too. I like how they did where they could change the timeline.
Right. Where he could kind of travel through the Force somehow. That was very fast. And it was really cool to see how Emperor Palpatine became such a major influence at the end.
Yes. How he was all, you know, he wasn't his normal self. He was like, you know, we can send you back to your family and none of this will have ever happened. And
yeah, that was a really interesting storyline and compelling opportunity for us to kind of see how the Force could be manipulated in ways we had not really considered.
Yeah, there's not a bad arc in Rebels, I don't think. All the story arcs are really good and have a purpose.
Yes, and what made it really good was it kind of brought in a little bit of Doctor Who for me. When Stephen Moffat was the writer for Doctor Who for several seasons towards the end of David Tennant's run and most of Matt Smith's, there were a lot of these, you wouldn't call them filler episodes, but they were filler episodes. They were episodes where you had kind of a Monster of the Week event and then that kind of thing, and it was kind of inconsequential. But what was fascinating was that Stephen Moffat could write an entire season of filler episodes, and it wouldn't be but like the first and last two or three episodes of a Doctor Who season would make everything in the season tie together.
It would tie them together. Yeah, I've always thought that was really cool how they wrote those.
And it was, you know, it's mind-blowing when you're watching them because you're just like, now wait a second. You mean that was actually important? Well, Dave Filoni did the same thing with Rebels. There would be these seemingly random episodes where they'd run into some, you know, small inconsequential group of rebels or some alien species that they wouldn't really have a lot of interaction with at any other time. And then towards the end of the series, Dave Filoni would be pulling stuff out of like season 1 or 2, make it relevant again and make it important. And it's just like, whoa, how did you do that? So it definitely pulls the rug out from underneath you a few times and makes it,
oh, it does,
really just fascinating. And one of those is, of course, tying in the Mortis trilogy from Clone Wars into Star Wars Rebels.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you that haven't seen it, there's a story arc in Star Wars Rebels where Ezra and Sabine and Zeb are trying to figure out what the Empire is doing on Lothal, and they find that the Empire is trying to dig up the old Jedi temple that Ezra and Kanan had visited a few times because it had some form of hieroglyphics or artwork that discussed the father, son, and daughter that were introduced in Clone Wars and how all of those were kind of elements of the Force in terms of an overarching balance of a light side and a dark side. And it was just amazing to see how the new series brought in so much of the old and tied it together and made for a really compelling story.
It was good. And, you know, it kind of ties up the loose ends on Mandalore in the later seasons too, with the Darksaber and who the leader's going to be and all the warring families on Mandalore, which is really cool to watch.
It was, and that was something we mentioned we were going to talk about in Clone Wars and didn't. There were whole arcs of Clone Wars where you kind of meet the Mandalorian culture as a peaceful culture, the Mandalorian culture as a war culture, and how they were constantly in conflict with one another and how that eventually started to tear Mandalore apart. And then we, you know, fast forward 20 years to Star Wars Rebels, and you see how the Empire used that to their advantage so that they could kind of keep Mandalore fighting itself so that they weren't going to fight the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, towards the end of Rebels, you kind of see how Mandalore starts to fight back, which is really cool.
Duchess Satine, she was always awesome.
Yes, she was. And, of course, she had the hots for Ewan McGregor and Obi-Wan Kenobi, so can't blame her for that.
I actually read an article that said that she was written in to Obi-Wan's story to show the readers and the fans and the viewers that Obi-Wan had the same choice as Anakin, but he chose the light side of that by not pursuing a relationship with her.
I can see that.
That his relationship with Satine paralleled Anakin's with Padme.
I think it also opens up the door for Anakin to see his relationship with Padme is okay.
Yeah.
And I think that might have been, I mean, I don't know if that was the intent, but I think that's definitely something that you can interpret out of it, is Anakin was like, wait, you have a girlfriend, or you had a girlfriend, or there's a love interest, what?
Yeah.
And he starts to kind of pay attention and follow it because that means, well, if Obi-Wan can do it, then I can.
Yeah.
You know, and it opens up the door for the possibility that things might not work out so well for him. But still, just, it's cool. That was definitely a fascinating story arc. And of course, you know, you see Obi-Wan Kenobi watch Satine, spoilers here, listeners. You see Obi-Wan watch Satine die and still not give in to his anger and hatred against Darth Maul or anything else like that. And that's just, that's a powerful person.
And then that comes back to play in Rebels when Maul and Obi-Wan meet each other in the desert.
Yeah, I know. I mean, they did a really good job kind of tying those two series together. It is definitely a fascinating collection of, well, I mean, really, it's just two series.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Clone Wars and Rebels, but in all honesty, just anything Dave Filoni touches is gold. We've said it on this show, and I still stand by that statement.
Well, I agree. It's like Clone Wars and Rebels are just kind of the continuation of the story that started in the first season of Clone Wars, basically.
Right, and it ties into each other so well, and it definitely provides us with a lot of insight between not only episodes 2 and 3, but really from episode 2 all the way to episode 4.
Mm-hmm.
It makes the transition from the beginning of the Clone Wars at the end of Attack of the Clones all the way through when the 1084 comes on the screen in Star Wars Episode 4, it makes all of those pieces of the puzzle just connect a whole lot more.
And you know, I know we've talked about this before too, but in the background of Rogue One, you can see the Ghost as one of the ships in the battle.
And Harrison Dula gets a name drop, and you see Chopper. Yeah, there's ties into Rogue One as well, which is awesome. And thanks to Forces of Destiny, you actually see that Harrison Dula makes it all the way to the Battle of Endor and afterwards.
Yep, and I love the end of Rebels where it talks that Rex was at the Battle of Endor.
Yeah, it makes that connection there, which I think was really cool too.
I love that. That warmed my heart.
It did mine too, to sit there and go, oh, that's who that is. Yay!
Oh my gosh, Rex was in the movies. He was in the original trilogy. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was really good. That was a very, I don't know if that was intentional at the beginning of it all, but it definitely worked its way through, and it made it believable to me.
Yep, yep.
As we finish up the animation segment, there is one new show that Dave Filoni has started on Disney, and I believe this is on just regular Disney Channel, and it is called Star Wars Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Star Wars Resistance takes place 6 months before The Force Awakens, and it focuses on a character by the name of Kaz. Kazima Mizuda, I think, is his formal name in full length, and he was a New Republic pilot recruited by the Resistance to spy on the First Order by Poe Dameron. And Poe Dameron, actually, Oscar Isaac, makes a few guest voice acting appearances for his animated self. But anyway, so Kaz is basically thrown onto this spaceport called the Colossal, which is really like a racing platform. And it's also a hub of, you know, gray area activity in terms of trade. So his job is to kind of spy on the people that live on Colossus and see if he can find any First Order activity and then report it back to the Rebellion. And, you know, it's different than Rebels and Clone Wars because a lot of the characters that we're dealing with, you know, like I said, Oscar Isaac makes an appearance, Gwendolyn Christie makes a few appearances. But except for their occasional pop-ins, which is very rare, there's not a lot of connections to the overall storyline, at least not yet, of The Force Awakens. So I don't really see how this is going to be as closely connected as Rebels and Clone Wars ended up being. But it is still a very interesting story, and you're kind of following this particular character as he's kind of figuring out life.
I've not seen it yet. I've got it DVR'd, but I've not watched any of the episodes yet.
I would say of the three series, it's probably the most clearly aimed for a younger audience.
Okay.
But there's still, you know, some themes in there that, you know, as an adult, I sit there and go, huh, yeah, that was really good. There's a lot of stuff in there that can be good. The animation style is really cool. It fits. The anime style that they have used really fits what they're trying to do with the fighters and the speeders. And they definitely kind of bring in this whole element of racing.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely adds to it as well. So basically one of the subplots is that Kaz works for this mechanic and spends most of his time working with other mechanics trying to get this one speeder to be up and running so that he can actually race it.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, beyond that, there's other subplots of him trying to spy out and do the actual job he's there for, but that was the job he was given as a cover. And he takes it seriously after the first few episodes, and you start trying to get into you want to see him race just like you want to see anything else. So,
uh-oh.
I got buzzed again.
Uh-oh. I love the buzzer.
I love the buzzer, too.
It's so happy.
I love it. Yeah, I know. I could do meaner buzzers, but, you know.
Hey, we don't want to be mean.
Don't want to be mean. Well, we got in all the cartoons that we wanted to talk about, so yeah. That worked out really well. So, awesome. Any last comments on Clone Wars, Rebels, or Resistance?
If you want to watch Clone Wars, it's on Netflix, so there's...
At least for now.
There's quite a few seasons on there, so if you want to binge watch something, you can always binge watch that.
There are 6 seasons on there. The first 5 are the original, and then the season 6 were the Lost Missions that they are Netflix exclusives.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling that at some point in the future, probably not too far from now, they will be withdrawn from Netflix.
Yep, I would say you're probably right on that one.
The only one, they might not take off season 6, but they'll take off seasons 1 through 5.
Yeah, they may redo season 6 in their own way anyway, who knows?
Yeah, I'm wondering if season 6 will just kind of be remade into season 7 as part of it anyway.
Yeah.
But who knows? But anyway, if you haven't seen it, do that. And keep your eyes open for Rebels. I have a feeling that once Disney Plus comes out, it'll be released through Disney Plus, so you'll be able to watch it on the Disney streaming service. I have very little doubt of that. Or you can do what I'm doing and collect the DVDs.
There you go.
And if you haven't had a chance to watch Star Wars Resistance, I know that the second half of the season will be restarting after the winter break on January 13th, and I think they release on Sunday nights. So check out Star Wars Resistance. It's on the Disney Channel. It's not on Disney XD or Disney Junior or anything. It's on the regular Disney Channel. Or you can stream it online, which is another option. So, awesome.
Sweet.
Well, Landon, thanks, man. We've got 8 episodes down. Appreciate you doing
them. Oh, yeah, no problem. I love doing these. These are fun.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think today I'll choose the blue milk flavor that we're going to sign off with.
All right.
And since, you did the Danish butter cookies yesterday, so, and I think I did Christmas cookies a couple days before that, so we're kind of on a cookie kick here. But, whatever. Cookie kicking cookies. Yeah. So I think today we will do gingerbread cookies.
Oh, yum. So, I like that.
Yummy. Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, thanks again for listening to our Star Wars banter as we compared Clone Wars, Resistance, Rebels, and all the other cartoons, so Star Wars animation. We certainly hope you're enjoying these 12 Tides of Christmas, and we hope you will kick back and enjoy a tall glass of gingerbread-flavored blue milk. May the Force be with you.
Bye.
Another one down.
Good knocking deal. Them out like gangbusters.
I mean, you can always have a sip of me, though I warn you, it's got a little bit of fire in it.
Oh, I've seen the fire. I can handle it.
I will have to sleep on the couch tomorrow, so that's official. We have so many people coming in that there's no room.
Oh, wow.
So my wife was like, you have 2 choices. I said, what are my 2 choices? She said, you can sleep on the couch, or you can sleep on the double air mattress with your 5-year-old daughter.
Oh, Lord, no.
I warn you, she kicks a lot.
Yeah.
I said, I'll take the couch.
Hey, we're going to get on to Celebration 2 years from now. That's our goal.
That would be an awesome event. That would be fantastic. I'm all for it.
I am too. I want to get invited to stuff, dang it.
Yeah, man.
This is Alan Dean Foster.
And my name is Beth Revis. I'm the author of Rebel Rising, and welcome to Star Wars Tides.
I mean, you can always have a sip of me, though I warn you, it's got a little bit of fire in it.
Oh, I've seen the fire. I can handle it.